Oh, being alone long enough, that sounds just like me. Welcome to Baldwin and the Berg, where we are not alone. I am not alone. I have my co-host, as always. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golvash.
We are here on a very, very nice day in February, where it is not snowing, raining, hailing, anything that would be falling from
any,
the sky.
Any obscure weather.
Nothing is falling from the sky, and that is always great news. And we always have important topics to talk about, especially being in the city of Pittsburgh. Always something going on, but we want to start on the national level. The Houston Astros, again, are being smashed, tormented, and really for good reason. Bellinger, Trout, Aaron Judge, all blasting the Astros in the last few days. Cody Bellinger especially saying that Jose Altuve stole the 2017 MVP from Aaron Judge, which, take it, you can look at it as, you know,
Kind of did.
Yeah, especially if he's got those signs being stolen. So,
and Bellinger also saying that they that the Dodgers got the World Series stolen from them in 2017. Do I necessarily believe that? They're all. Do you believe that? They're all for debate whether you believe what Bellinger's saying. But are his points very valid? Yes.
Yes.
And we want to start there. And another thing that I thought was just emphatic of Rob Manfred to say. Rob Manfred called the trophy named after the commissioner, the commissioner's trophy, to the winner of the World Series, a piece of metal. Yeah.
Did you see Justin Turner's response to that?
What did Justin Turner say?
Turner said that basically the only thing that is devaluing the trophy is the fact that the commissioner's name is in the trophy.
In the trophy, which is pathetic. Why would the commissioner say that?
Exactly.
I don't get it.
I thought everyone thought he was in touch with the players, and then that just shows he has absolutely no feeling for these players whatsoever.
Look, I look at this in a couple ways. One, we're talking baseball in the first week of spring training in the middle of February. That's good for baseball.
Yeah,
baseball does not get talked about until June, when after the NBA and after the NHL, no one's talking baseball.
This is the biggest publicity baseball's had probably within the last 5-10 years.
This is big. I mean, this is big for baseball. Baseball's getting talked about. And you know what? Baseball's probably like, MLB's probably like, oh, okay, you're going to talk about us. We're going to be in the news. Remember, this is the dead time of the year when you don't have, you know, March Madness hasn't started up yet. The NHL and the NBA,
all sports are just,
the All-Star breaks are just ending. And, you know, the playoff chases, you know, they really haven't ramped up as much as you really would think they would be. But that's every year. I think that baseball is not handling the situation well. I think Major League Baseball is struggling to... I don't think that they punished the Astros in a... Well, let me say this.
They didn't punish the players.
When the punishments originally rang out, and it was $5 million they were punished, that's the maximum allowed in the CBA, you suspend the manager for a whole year, suspend the general manager a whole year, and you take away some draft picks. I thought that that was a lot at first. I did, because you really haven't seen a punishment like that since, compared to like the New Orleans Saints with Bounty Gate. I think that looking back on it now, especially with all these players coming out, and you know, Bellinger doesn't really talk much. Mike Trout?
I've never heard Mike Trout talk bad about anyone ever.
I never heard Mike Trout speak
to
the media.
It's becoming such a big deal because there's been such an outcry from these players, and yep. I think that's why they're trying to get more punishment against these players. But also another thing is, how do you go by handling the players that used to be on those Houston Astros teams? Because you look at Gerrit Cole now with the Yankees, would he be, you know, have sanctions against him? And Joe Musgrove, Pirate, won a game for them in the World Series in 2017. So there's guys that are throughout the league right now that were part of those teams.
And partly they got jobs because of it, because they were part of that World Series team.
Yeah, they moved on, got more money.
Exactly. A lot of good probably baseball players that did it the right way obviously had lost jobs due to this cheating.
Now, one thing I want to do, I don't know what the right word is. I wouldn't say connect, but I want to, I guess, compare the steroid era and the punishments to what we're seeing right now at the Astros. Now, one thing we're not seeing is the players have not been punished. Now, when I see half the league, almost the whole entire league, actually, come out and express their opinions on the Astros, when, with all due respect, not many baseball players will go out there and rip you. It's 162 games. It's a grind. It's constant. It's not like the NFL where you play one game a week and there's a bunch of dead time. baseball every single day.
Every day you're working. Every day you're playing almost every other day. It just,
and you all you gotta focus schedule. On the next game. You don't have that downtime like in football that you can, you know, you can talk
or even throw like a cheaper mark at somebody.
Now, I mean, obviously it's spring training and you got lots of time to talk, and people are just reporting to camps. But I think the showing the players frustration, I've kind of opened my eyes a little bit more and saying the whole entire Houston Astros roster basically knew what was going on. At least the roster of position players. Okay. And I'm sure that a large number of the pitchers knew as well.
Now, but like, how do you handle that? Do you send down a fine on everyone who was involved and then potentially suspend players that were knew a lot about it that are still on the team?
That's the problem. Well, yeah, well,
you don't know who all like really knew the most.
You knew Carlos Beltran was one of the ringleaders. You knew Alex Cora was one of the ringleaders. They are now out of their major league managing positions. I think Altuve, I think he knew more than everybody claims. Okay. Everybody's saying, you know, Jose Altuve, he didn't really know what was going on. I mean, he only participated a few times. Come on. He's the leader of that team. He's the one running it.
He's the longest tenured, I'm pretty sure, on that team as well. So, of course, and that's probably years in the making. If it was something that happened in their first World Series championship as well, then
what made you think it – I mean, who knows how long this has been going on?
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's what is really concerning because
they could have been doing this for the past like 5 years.
I remember how great of a season Aaron Judge had. And now I personally would have gave the MVP to Jose Altuve, who did win it. But looking back on it now and knowing all the damage that the Astros did, I have a hard feeling.
What was his batting average
during
his MVP year? Altuve's.
It was high 320s, 330s.
Now, what do you think that is if you believe, if he was cheating, if he's not, what do you think that goes down to?
Honestly, I think it goes down about 300, 310.
He's still up there in the 300s.
Like, I don't know. I mean, what Judge did, I felt like I agree with Bellinger. I would have gave it to Judge.
Another thing, Giancarlo Stanton
said he would have hit 80.
80 home runs. I'm not necessarily sure about
that. I believe that.
But if you know what pitch is coming, it's very likely.
I mean, if you're as strong as Giancarlo Stanton is and you know what pitch is coming, all you have to do is just gear up for it, and he can send that thing 500 feet or however how far he hits him.
What do we think of Jose Altuve tattoo gate, I guess is what we're calling it? Don't rip out my jersey, I have a tattoo.
I don't.
Is that what that is now being claimed?
I guess they're basically saying.
I hear stuff all about it. I don't know too much about it, to be completely honest.
Well, because I was just heard. I just saw that it was a wire for national TV. Yeah. Like he was being mic'd up.
So 2017, Jose Altuve hit 346. He drove in 81, had over 200 hits with 204. Actually, a couple less than his 2016 total, 216, and his career high, 225 in 2014, but enough to win the MVP in that season and lead Houston to the World Series.
He batted 346.
Now, knowing that, what do you think the average would go down to? We'll restate our claims here, knowing the specifics.
Still in 300s, I'd say back down towards 310, 315.
I'd say 320.
I'd say 320, 310, somewhere in that ballpark.
He's still a phenomenal hitter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. He'd still be around the
range. But, like, I definitely think that if he was cheating, that definitely would have gave him that next level edge. Because he already is, like you guys were saying, he's already a great enough hitter as it is. Just to give him that extra advantage really probably sent him over the top to MVP status.
Yeah, and one thing that a lot of people have been talking about is the home road splits with the Astros. When they won the World Series at home, Altuve hit 472 with 6 home runs and 12 RBIs. On the road, Jose Altuve hit 143 with 1 home run, yeah, 2 RBIs.
Because I used to watch like highlights of that World Series all the time, because I was widely considered that was one of the better World Series that I've ever watched. It was intense. There was home runs going back and forth. I thought it was a great World Series, but like now that this has occurred, but like I'd always look like the Dodgers always won at home, and so did the Astros. And then it went to Game 7, and Yu Darvish fell apart.
Correa hit 371 at home, and on the road he hit 211. Alex Bregman hit 273 at home, 154 on the road. How about Brian McCann? 300 at home with a home run and 7 RBIs. On the road, he was awful. Batting average of .037, on base of .161. He slugged .037. So he didn't walk at all. One hit total. No home runs, no RBIs, obviously. Yuri Gurriel, he was good. He hit 300 at home and 300 on the road, so he wasn't really effective. But other than that, the splits home road were phenomenally one-sided.
And again, as you read those numbers, it just makes you think, like, I mean, this ruined Clayton Kershaw, if you think about it. Because, I mean, that was probably one of the better teams the Dodgers had. I mean, they made it. I mean, and some would say they were arguably better than that Astros team. But, I mean, due to this cheating thing, they have a World Series snatched and a legacy ruined.
Yeah, and one thing I do want to talk about. Is this, in your opinion, worse than the steroid era in Major League Baseball? Do you think this is worse? Do you think there should be more punishments for the players? Or do you think this is just a completely separate situation that should not correlate?
I think this is worse just because, like, it was a whole organization type thing. Coaches were in on it. Players were in on it. Steroids was mainly a personality thing. It was a selfish act, typically. So it's worse because you won World Series championships based off of this whole thing, cheating and as a team effort. So I think it's 10 times worse than being a selfish person and taking steroids and affecting the game.
And I do believe the players deserve to be punished. I mean, yeah, the coaches did, but, like, I mean, the coaches or someone probably suggested it, and then the players, they had to buy into that, and they had to
do
it.
And that's all of them,
too. And that's everyone. Every single person bought into it, and how no one got punished, and they're going to be able to play, just, it blows my mind. I just don't think it's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen a lot of people in the media go back and forth on this, and Colin Cowherd, one of them, actually kind of like supporting the, like, not really crushing the Astros like everybody else is. I think since it is an organizational thing, I think it's different. I think this is different than the steroid era because the steroid era was going on for 5-6 years. The steroid era never ended.
Yeah.
It never ended.
Yeah.
It just kept going on. Bonds, Clemens. Once you thought it was over, you know, it all started with Sosa and McGuire. You had the home run race going, the 60 homers. And then here you go. Let's pull out Bonds and Clemens because they're seeing what these guys are doing. Barry Bonds is like, oh, I'm sure if they can hit 60 home runs on steroids, how many can I hit? 83. And looking at it, it just kept going on and on and on. Then MLB brings sanctions down. And then here comes the Mitchell report. Everything just comes out in terms of the steroid era. There was just so much, and it dwelled on for such a long time. And the Astros thing, we know it took place for 3 years, but the whole scandal, if you can call it that, because that's what it is, it's only lasting like a couple months from when we knew the investigation took place to where we currently sit right now.
Yeah, because once the season kicks in, and if there isn't any player fines or anything, it's going to be back to normal. Yes, there's going to be, you know, you're going to look at the Astros organization and see them as, you know, cheaters, but in the end, basically from this point on, if there's no more suspensions or anything, it's kind of over.
Yeah, Red Sox Yankees were filled with just, you know, guys on steroids pimping home runs off of each other. And, you know, all those years, Texas Rangers were hitting home runs and, you know, those good San Francisco teams. I think it's different in terms of I think it's different because everybody was kind of doing it. Steroids is different because, look, I think sign stealing happens. It's just naturally in the game. But the technology is what pushes it over the edge and what makes it worse, especially in these players' minds, is what I truly fondly believe. So let's move on. Let's go to another troubling topic that once again is popping up. Myles Garrett once again claiming that Mason Rudolph called him a racial slur. Again, we have to talk about this. And again, no one wants to. Do we believe Myles Garrett? No. Do we think that Myles Garrett should be going out like this and again accusing Mason Rudolph? Why? I mean, you just got reinstated. Why are we doing this again? So Mike Tomlin went on ESPN and blasted Myles Garrett and blasted ESPN for their coverage of everything. And Tomlin was in the right to do so. He stood up for his quarterback. He defended his quarterback, Mason Rudolph. And Rudolph's agent put out a statement a while back saying that Garrett would be subject for legal liability. Exactly. What do we think?
Because you can't put something that, you know, put those type of words in someone's mouth that can have a huge impact on someone's career without getting in trouble for it. And also, there's just no evidence for it. And there was players. There were several players.
An investigation was done, and nothing was picked up.
There were several players around what was happening between Rudolph and Myles Garrett. Also, Rudolph plays with different players, and I just don't think he would ever use that term. So I just think it's bogus. I think Myles Garrett is in the wrong here, and I don't think he should have came out again trying to just make him seem like the better person maybe in this event.
Yeah, I really don't like the way to talk about this again. I just see no point to it. And you know what? If I'm Mason Rudolph and that legal team, if Myles Garrett is again going to try to, you know, put your name through the mud and the dirt and try to make you look like an absolute fool and claim all this and it's just not true, then and Mike Tomlin has spoken with people inside the Cleveland organization that they didn't know this. Like, I swear, like, I really think that if it would have happened, that then everybody in that Cleveland locker room would have known. Everybody in the organization would have known. And I mean, John Dorsey says, "Oh, Myles Garrett told me." Do I necessarily believe?
Well, John Dorsey's not fired.
No.
Wait, yeah, he is. John Dorsey's fired.
Maybe. I couldn't tell you.
I believe
you
he
that.
Is. Haslam fired him and Freddie Kitchens.
I just don't see how. Yeah, as soon as the helmet hitting on the head happened, that Myles Garrett didn't come out with this claim right away, because that would have made a whole different ordeal compared to what it is now.
Yeah. I think John Dorsey, I think what ended up happening, I think he ended up, what, did he, did they mutually part ways? I don't think they fired him. Did they mutually part ways?
Less than 48 hours after firing head coach Freddie Kitchens, the Browns have announced they have parted ways with general manager John Dorsey.
All right, so they fired Freddie Kitchens, but they mutually parted ways. It's basically the same thing as firing them, but
yeah, and, I mean,
mutually parting ways.
And back to Garrett, like, none of the players, like, none of his teammates really backed him up on it.
No.
Even Baker said, "I heard nothing like
it's
that."
It's been more of a solo act for Myles Garrett thus far.
Yeah, and we've seen antics from Myles Garrett in the past. Yeah, I hate that we got to talk about it. I've said it multiple times. I just think that it's not right, and Mason Rudolph should not have to go through this. That's the thing that really bothers me, and the thing that's bothering Mike Tomlin. Like, why are we still talking about this, Cleveland?
This happened, what, like, months ago?
Any publicity is basically good publicity.
Cleveland loves
negative
their
or
publicity.
Positive.
And you never realize the good organizations like New England and the Steelers and Seattle, they don't, and New Orleans, they don't talk. You don't see this. You don't see any of this inside good organizations that are run well. But hey, just another day in Cleveland.
In the factory of sadness.
The factory of sadness. Let's move on to the NFL now is discussing some new rule changes and some new implementing of more games and more teams in the playoffs. Talking about going to 17 games with 3 weeks of preseason, I believe. And now 7 teams from each conference would make the playoffs, which means the Steelers in the past 2 seasons, if this rule would have been in effect, Steelers would have made the playoffs. Now,
how far we would have gone?
So what would have happened is this year the Steelers would have played Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes.
No, I thought we would have played the Rams. Is that what it said?
The
no.
Rams.
Oh,
wait,
the
no,
Rams
are in
the
I never. I saw something on Twitter.
No,
the Ravens were the number one seed, so the Ravens would get a bye. Okay, so the Ravens would have got a bye. San Francisco would have got a bye. They would not have played on Wild Card weekend.
So the Rams would have played.
The Rams would have played in the NFC against.
So
who was the second
Green Bay,
seed?
Probably.
They would have played Green Bay. And then we would have played
the Chiefs.
KC. Yeah.
We're talking about the Rams. The Rams didn't make the playoffs.
They would have been the seventh seed.
I thought you were talking about in terms of if the Rams were at the top. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the Rams would make the playoffs. Steelers would have made the playoffs. And one other interesting wrinkle to this is that New England, they would have been in the wild card round a few more times and would have had to play an extra game, which, you know, good old Tommy doesn't like to play that extra game on wild card weekend. We've seen how he's been able to lose those games even at home, like this year to Tennessee. So could a lot change? Yeah. Could a lot have been different if these rules were in effect in the years past? I 100% think that.
I think it's a great idea just because, at least with the playoff format, because you have 32 teams and only 12 12 were making the playoffs, and you play a pretty grueling season, 16 weeks, whatever, 17 weeks throughout the season, and I think more teams deserve to make the playoffs, but I don't agree with the idea of having an extended regular season. Because who are you going to throw in as your 17th game?
Okay, here's where I disagree with you. I go the complete opposite way. I like the 17th game. In terms of if I could pick either or, I would take 17 games over 7 teams in the playoffs. I think that whenever you expand the playoffs to put too many teams in it, you get a scenario like the NBA where the 7th and 8th teams are 500. And they're or below, and they're not good.
And it's not good football.
No, it's not. It's not going to be a good matchup. Now, if you throw the Steelers in there against Kansas City, Duck Hodges against Patrick Mahomes, that game's going to be 35-0 at halftime. I don't care how good the defense is.
You mean in favor of the Steelers, right?
Yeah, right. I don't really care how great your defense is playing. The game's not going to be that close if you don't have any type of offense whatsoever. And I think that if you had a 17th game, you keep everything the same, and you do what baseball does, and you throw in there a natural rival. Okay. The Pirates' natural rival is Detroit. Why? I couldn't tell you. But their natural rival is Detroit, which means they play Detroit every season. If you put a natural rival in the NFL, Steelers would play Philadelphia once a year. And they would alternate between playing in Pittsburgh 1 year, playing in Philadelphia 1 year, maybe playing at Penn State 1 year right in between. So I think that's interesting. You could see, you know, the Dolphins and Tampa Bay playing each other. You could see the Rams playing the Chargers every year. Houston Texans playing Dallas. I think it's possible. I think that it is likely that if this is the situation that the NFL moves into, that is what happens.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the idea of a little bit more of a extended playoff, like at least team and format. Compared to the regular season, I don't want to see another regular season game that might not have as much meaning. Because by week 17, probably, if they would extend it, teams are already going to be figured out if they're in the playoff or not. You're going to know. So I think a 17th game is not going to matter as much. I think preseason is dumb. Like, I think 2 or 3 games is perfectly fine.
Well, here's my thing. I think the fourth preseason game, no one plays. It's basically who's going to make the practice squad and who's going to be the last two guys on the roster. Okay. And similarly, that's kind of how the first preseason game is. The second preseason game and the third preseason game are basically the only ones, at least now, that the starters are playing. And some starters aren't even playing the second preseason game.
They just go in the first quarter. Like what? Ben didn't play any, right?
Yeah, and I think he might have played the third preseason. I don't remember. But this year coming up, Steelers are going to play in the Hall of Fame game. It's all but confirmed. Steelers do not need 5 preseason games to get ready, okay? Not when you're not playing anybody.
Exactly.
And you don't have a first-round pick that you're trying to show off. So, I mean, that has nothing to do in terms of how the rules will be. But I just think, that even 2 weeks of preseason will be fine. But what I would implement is more joint practices with other teams.
So more brawls is what you're saying?
Not more brawls.
Agree. I wouldn't mind to see more brawls.
Here's the thing.
Who was that a few years back? The Cowboys and like someone else?
I think it was Detroit.
Going at it.
Here.
Detroit.
I think Detroit and New England. But here's the thing. If you get two teams that like don't really care about each other, like let's say you do a joint practice. Let's say, you know, you throw the Jets in there with like Cleveland.
Or do NFC, AFC, so like the Steelers and the Giants. Like
the Bengals go play the Vikings and like, you know, have joint practices in terms of just, you know, like they have it now, but just have more. Because having those game-like reps just not in the game is valuable. And do you really need the preseason? It's unwatchable football. It's time for developing. Now, coaches are going to hate it because they're not going to be able to see their players, you know, on the big stage. So, I think 2 could work, but I will take the happy medium of 3.
Yeah, I think that's perfect for now.
Yeah, because you still want to see young guy, like half the league's undrafted, and you know back end of the draft guys. You want to give these guys a chance to be able to make it, and it's possible because of those 4 preseason games, throwing the Hall of Fame game. Because
once they hit the practice squad when the regular season starts, you're not going to tell if they're going to emerge as a star or a good player on the field.
Not unless someone gets hurt and you got to promote them up to the active roster. But Golvast, what do you think ends up happening with the 17 games, 7 teams? Do you think it happens? I don't like 7 teams, but, I mean, I think the playoff field should be kept. The smaller it is, the better the football. What do you think?
I mean, I do like the 16 playoff format. I mean, as you said, the less amount of teams, the more competitive it's going to be. But I don't know. I feel like a bunch of fan bases and owners are going to complain, like, hence, the Cowboys and all these teams are going to complain for it to the playoff window to expand. I feel like it will happen eventually, but I do not think it happens next season, for sure.
I just think it's better for the NFL. You're going to get more viewerships because when you say this is a playoff game instead of a Week 17 game, more people are going to watch. You're going to get more money and revenue out of it. It's all about the money. It's a business. I think
actually,
it's going to happen.
Now that I look at that, you're right. I mean, 2 years ago when the Patriots played the Rams, that was some of the worst football ever, but people still watched it.
Yeah, are you going to watch a Week 17 matchup between the Steelers and the Kansas City Chiefs as a national perspective or a playoff game between the Steelers and the Chiefs? You're going to watch that playoff game compared to a Week 17 game.
Right, I agree. All right, so let's move on. Let's go to the Penguins real quick. Pretty good
for a team that wasn't expected to do well coming into this season.
Numero uno, Metropolitan Division. What do we think of the Penguins' recent play? What do we think of Zucker's recent play? Pens play Toronto tonight on the road. Matt Murray's in net. I think that the Penguins have been solid as of late. I think Jason Zucker has adapted well after a shaky first game. And playing with Crosby is definitely going to help him the rest of the way. And I believe that this Penguins team, if they can consistently get the strong goaltending, can go anywhere.
I think by the way they're playing right now, this is a very scary team. And you were without Malkin last game. You're still without Dumoulin.
Still without Marino. Still without Gensel.
And Bukestad. There's players. Finally, you get Dominic Cahoon back, which was nice to see. But this team is scary. The way they've been playing, the way Zucker has meshed with Crosby, which is not super surprising because it's Crosby, and he makes every player look
really good. And he didn't make Galchenyuk look too hot.
But Zucker's just a guy that goes to the net, and Crosby, on several of the goals, have been able to find him in front of the net. But this team is playing really well right now.
Yeah, this
they have been playing pretty well in the power play against the Canadiens and then the Red Wings. They were 2-for-5, but then they were perfect, 3-for-3 against the Maple Leafs. That's great. You need to get production from your power play, which this year, their power play hasn't been good because of the lack of Phil Kessel. That shot from the right side, and also
I don't think Sid and Malkin have gotten much time to play together.
Yeah, because people have just been injured, and that's how this season has been. And also another thing, just the back-and-forth play of Jari and Murray is outstanding.
We're getting the new Murray and Fleury if they make it into this playoff.
It's working.
And solid goaltenders that can carry the load.
I don't know how the Penguins keep doing it, but they just keep
finding ways to win. I mean, 5-2 throughout February.
I think that's Mike Sullivan's touch on the young guys that comes up because he was there in Wilkes-Barre for a little bit, and he knows how to handle those players, and he's just been so good at making them produce and developing them into NHL players. And it's important because throughout the seasons, you've seen Gensel and Rust and Sherry come up and produce in the playoffs. And here comes another handful of guys. If, like, Agostino plays or Lafferty or Angelo, like, you got different guys that are coming up from the minor leagues, John Marino, another guy, that you've been able to develop and make into stars.
And now I have a question. Do you put Sullivan in the Jack Adams conversation?
He was already in the Jack Adams
conversation. Well, I know, but do you think he flat out wins it over
if they, I'd give it coach? To him. Who if else they, would you give it to?
If they win this division now.
I'd have to go look.
If they win this division now, he wins it. He wins it for sure. A lot of people were talking about Rick Tocchet, but the Coyotes have fallen off a little bit, and that's about it. There's no one else really.
Probably Bruce Cassidy from
Boston.
Craig Berube. St. Louis.
Yeah. No. The way Mike Sullivan's working with this team with all these injuries.
Yeah,
Crosby being out, Malkin being out, Jake Gensel, your best pure goal scorer at this point for his age, out. I think that, you know, you lose John Marino, you lose Brian Dibble, you lose all these guys. It doesn't matter. Everybody's gotten hurt. Everybody. Forwards, winger, everyone, defenseman, everybody's been hurt. Everybody's been hurt. Thankfully, the goalies have not. Knock on this wood on our table right here. But I think just the way that Sullivan has been able to command the room, command the respect of these players and just be able to bring everything together. When at the beginning of the season, no one knew what this Penguins team was going to be after trading Phil Kessel. No one knew. And for also just Mike Sullivan to put this out here and be at the top of the Metro, where many people would be completely okay with being third in the Metro or even second in the Metro, then fine by me. I think he's having a phenomenal coaching season, and I think he 100% deserves Coach of the Year.
And another player I wanted to kind of a player I wanted to look at, though, just the play of Brian Rust this year in general with 48 points on the year, 23 goals, a career high, I'm pretty sure, is just career unbelievable.
Is it a career high in both?
I believe so.
I think so.
He continues to keep setting career highs, and I think he has gotten to that career high in at least goal totals.
Uh-oh. Here we go, Bray. We got breaking news right into the desk. Ready for
I haven't
the...
seen it. This is all you.
Breaking news. We're going to stick with the Penguins. The Penguins, near the trade deadline, have just made a trade.
Really? That's my next topic I was going to touch on.
I haven't seen this. I didn't see this.
From the official Penguins Twitter account, as of a minute ago, the Penguins have acquired forwards Riley Barber and Phil Verone from the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for Joseph Blandisi and Jake Lucchini.
Okay, so that's a minor deal. It's nothing major.
Barber and Verone will report to Wilkes-Barre. So it's nothing major.
Oh, you're like acting like it's...
Hey,
I thought it was.
We still got to break in the breaking news whenever we can. So, I mean, that's just added depth. Joseph Blandisi was back and forth between Wilkes-Barre and Pittsburgh. He basically just needed a home in the middle of wherever he was staying. Mm-hmm. Poor guy was back and forth like 20 times. The transaction wire of the Penguins, if you will go and look on there, is probably just Joseph Blandisi. And putting people on injured reserve and taking people off injured reserve. I think that, but when I look at that, the Penguins' depth has really been clutch this season. And it might be that, you know, these guys have come up, and if they play, add to the continued depth. And I think that's what's really kept the team alive and stable with all the injuries. You need that depth. And you've seen, you know, you have not been able to see it with many teams, but with the Penguins, it seems like even when you don't have many draft picks that I keep saying you need to use and not trade, they still find a way. It's so impressive.
And that kind of depth is what separates the good teams from the great teams in this league.
Point in case, last year, the Blues, they don't have any really like great players other than Tarasenko, but they were able to use their depth and win a Stanley Cup. But
they had long defensemen that were able to skate that puck, and they had the hottest goaltender in the league.
Speaking of depth, though, for the Penguins, since Zucker's came here, they moved Hornquist down to the fourth line, and I think that's been a huge aspect of their depth playing well recently, because there was the Detroit game. Lafferty had a goal to start off the game where they just were crashing the net, and I think Hornquist... It's good to put Hornquist down there because he's teaching those young guys to go to the net. If they're not going to be pure goal scorers, you need them just to go and crash the net. And Hornquist is teaching them perfectly. He had two goals against Detroit. Should have had a third, but that Lafferty goal ended up getting reversed back to Sam Lafferty, taking away a hat trick. But Hornquist, I think...
Did you throw your hat on the ice there, Nate?
No.
You were at the game, right?
Yeah, I was going to have my dad throw his, but then it's his good luck hat.
Oh.
I thought he already threw one of those.
No, he threw one against the Flyers in... 2018 playoffs, and we lost
with
that
Goldberg.
Year. We lost that year, and it was his good luck hat. They won back-to-back, and then he throws his hat, and we lose instead of three-peating. Anyways.
Kind of like when I threw my Jolly Roger on the ground before the 2015 wildcard game, because I was sad, and then the Pirates had never been good again, and I went and got that flag blessed, by the way, if you guys didn't know that.
Oh, wait, you got it blessed?
I got the flag blessed.
I've heard about that.
I got the flag blessed that next summer by Father Bob from Holy Angels Church in Hayes. Father Bob is friends with
what?
My... I get a Holy Angels Church. Father Bob is friends with my neighbor, so Father Bob came to a cookout at my neighbor's house, and I was like, Father Bob, I'm sorry for my sins of throwing my flag on the ground. Pirates have not been good. Please bless my flag. Then the Pirates went on like a 6-game winning streak, I felt like it worked, but then it really didn't because now they're bad again.
Speaking of Pirates, we have another incident within the Pirates organization.
We'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll get there. Hold on.
Before we sort of step away from the Penguins, I want to talk about... Do the Penguins make any more moves?
Yeah, well, no. They just did, but...
we're talking about... A lot of people were thinking they still might go out and get defensemen.
Ilya Kovalchuk is
no,
the name I've
no.
heard.
That's no,
the name
way.
I've heard.
I can't see them getting Kovalchuk because Montreal's still trying to compete, and also, it's bringing in another Kessel. Sort of has an ego out there.
Sure that. Score some goals.
He can score, but like... I don't know. I mean, what would you have to give up for him? Because I know the Canadians would want a good return just because
of Dominic Simone.
How he's playing. Maybe. Anyways, but I think the Penguins might try to go out and get a defenseman, except that the market has dwindled from the recent moves. Brendan Dillon going to the Capitals from San Jose. Alex Martinez from the Kings to the Vegas
Knights. How about Eric Gustafson?
Okay, Chicago? I don't know.
You can get a defenseman. I don't think you need to.
I don't think they need to. People are still talking about it, and I don't think you need to, because if Dumoulin comes back and he's healthy, then you still have – you have your sixth defenseman, and you still have Ruudel and Rikula sitting out, scratch, and guys potentially in the minors that, if need be, could come up.
What do we think of our buddy, the podcast guy, Owen Krebs, saying that Dominic Simone is really good? Any thoughts on that?
To me, Dominic Simone just doesn't stand out. He just doesn't. He doesn't have that aspect of him, as just about every player has a certain key point to them, characteristic that makes them stand out to you. But Simone has some speed, not a lot. Doesn't pass very well, to be honest.
No, you know,
he looks lost sometimes on the ice. Against Detroit, I was sitting there watching him, and my dad was like, "Oh, I know you and Gulvash rip on him, but he's not terrible." And I'm like,
"He's terrible.
He just missed four passes.
Yep.
You can't stand his
skates. Skating in circles." I just don't. I don't know.
I'm trying to put a name on it. I cannot put a name on it. I can put a ball and volleyball name on it, but I can't put a professional name on it. As to who is really consistent, who can be really good. If sometimes they play really good, and then the next day they are awful.
Are you saying that?
I think we all know the ball and volleyball name. I'm thinking of. I think we all know the name we're thinking of. But who is in professional sports? Who is just really good one day and then awful the next day?
Oh, Kochenyuk.
No.
No, not this year.
I feel like there's someone in it. But that's my thoughts on Dominic Simone.
Juju.
That's my thing on Dominic Simone.
Actually, no. Mike Evans.
For the Buccaneers?
No,
for the
Buccaneers. Don't have anybody there. Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston is the perfect example.
There you go, yeah.
Jameis Winston, he will either throw four touchdowns or he will throw four interceptions.
Well, how do you feel about Jameis Winston getting LASIK eye surgery?
I don't think it has anything to do with anything. Like, everybody's gonna be like,
he couldn't see the scoreboard.
Oh, Jameis Winston, he's gonna throw better now. I don't know about that.
He couldn't see the scoreboard.
Could he really not see the scoreboard?
He'd squint all the goddamn.
All right, so if he can't
all the time.
So if he can't see, how did he throw like 30 touchdowns?
Chuck it and pray.
And you have Mike Evans. So
and you 30 have Mike
touchdowns,
Evans.
30 interceptions.
You just have to throw.
Love Baldwin volleyball. We're not hating on anybody. But let's move on. We're talking about
Jameis Winston.
Talking about a lot of different things. So let's move on to hating again. Let's go to my irrelevant fact of the day. Yay. All right. So as we mentioned earlier, Rob Manfred called the World Series trophy a piece of metal. A piece of metal. I looked up what else is made of metal, and some guy named Steve, I guess it says he's an IT marketing guy. He listed some things. Cars, boats, watches, bikes, bridges. They're all made of metal, but you know what does not have the significance? Those things that the World Series trophy has. So you know what, Rob Manfred, lots of things are made of metal. But the significance of the World Series trophy is what makes it so special. Sorry, Rob Manfred, it's special.
It's special.
It's the World Series trophy. It's named after your position, my precious. So there's your real relevant fact of the day. All right, let's move on. I'm sorry now. I'm sorry you had to listen to that.
I'm scared now. I'm sorry.
My I'm sorry goes to someone that Gulvash referenced earlier in the show, Alex Galchenyuk saying, I'm sorry to the Penguins. In his first game with the Wild, hey, he scored two goals. One to send the game to overtime and one to win it in a shootout. Alex Galchenyuk. Great job scoring two goals when you couldn't do that all year for the Penguins.
To interrupt, the shootout goal does not count toward the stats, but it does count as a win for his team.
It does. He did something productive.
He did something productive, something he didn't do in the all 30, 40 games that he played for the Penguins.
I'm sorry, Penguins. Alex Galchenyuk, not good.
All right.
Go ahead, Nate.
I don't have one right now. You're going to have to come back.
Wow.
For the first time ever, I'm not ready for him.
I'm not ready for one either, to be completely honest with you.
Nate does not feel sorry to anybody.
Yeah, honestly. All right, here we go. I'm sorry, Washington Capitals, that the Penguins have taken over your position. Oh. Meanwhile, I'd rather give it back to you because I don't really want to be sitting atop the Metro. It looks nice on a banner that sits up with a bunch of other years they won the division, but I don't know. I'd rather be an underdog.
Doesn't feel that comfortable, does it?
No.
I'm going to be, oh, every Astros player saying I'm sorry to the fan bases, even though everyone knows that they're not sorry.
No, they won a World Series, and they've got the change of money is so incredible that, you know, Astros players made so many money and so much money, and opposing players just lost so much money. What a mess. Let's go to another mess. This one in Bradenton, Florida. Pirates are starting spring training. And, yeah, so we got news yesterday. Pablo Reyes, little Pablo, you know. Remember a couple years ago he had that great spring training. He was flying around. He was hitting homers. He was playing great defense. Yeah, well, he just got popped for PEDs. 80 games for Pablo Reyes. You won't be seeing him flying around the outfield anytime soon.
I don't think he realizes that. With him on PEDs, that he'd probably blow up like a balloon. Because you ever see him? He's the skinniest man out there.
He's like us. He looks like us.
He's 5'8", 175.
He's
that
smaller
dude is
than
skinny.
Us.
Yeah. You're telling me you no one would be able to tell Pablo Reyes? Come on.
Yeah,
come on.
Come on, man. Pablo Reyes, not a great decision, buddy. You hit 230, 240 area.
203 last year.
Yeah, that's what he hit though in like I think his first stint in the that's what he had been hitting in like the minors, and then
no, that was in the majors with the Pirates this year. 203, two homers, 19 RBIs.
I think 230, 240 was like his minors average. I'm not exactly sure.
286 in the minors.
Was it?
Yeah. All right. So he was much better in the minors, but like
I guess when I wrote 230, I meant to put the zero before the three. I was trying to give Pablo Reyes a little bit more credit. Maybe 230 is what he would have reached with the PEDs.
He's just your utility defender. He's not a offensive production piece, so
yeah. Great start, Pirates. So one of your players gets popped for PEDs.
He's trying to clean up the mess from last year, bringing in all new management, but here you go again.
Well, yeah, I mean, they can't do anything about that, but
I know it's another
selfish act.
Yeah,
I want to talk about something that is important to my opinions of the Pirates. Okay, bullpens. So, there's a video Pirates tweeted out not too long ago. It's a video of Derek Shelton talking about Blake Cederlund. And the video is very cringeworthy if you go and watch it. It is Blake Cederlund and his very long blonde hair is like flipping through the wind. That is not why I want to talk about Blake Cederlund. I want to talk about Blake Cederlund because he throws 100 and he had an ERA of like 1.25 in Altoona. This guy's really good. He was in Indy, pitched 4 games, didn't go so well. That was at the back half of the minor league season at the very end. I think that this guy could be the next closer of the Pittsburgh Pirates. I think he's really good. And I think that once Keone Kella gets traded at the deadline, which many people were expecting to see, that it's very possible that Blake Cederlund could take over. Or maybe you get Edgar Santana. Or maybe Chad Kuhl, who I like as a super reliever. I think that the bullpen is very positive for the Pirates, and I would really like to see something happen in terms of developing those bullpen guys, because I think there's 6, 7, 8 guys you could throw out there that are pretty good, pretty solid guys. Let's say, you know, Chris Stratton, everybody loves his spin rate, and I mean, he hasn't been too bad, and I really like Edgar Santana coming back, and as I mentioned, Chad Kuhl, because I think Chad Kuhl's stuff will play up in the bullpen. I really like with the fact that how he uses his fastball slider combo, and in the bullpen, not having the stress of having to go, you know, try to go 5-6 innings every start out there, I think it can help him. I really think the velo will play up, and I really like that Nick Birdie is also coming back, because Birdie's stuff, like the other guys, are just phenomenal. Another guy that throws upwards of 100 and is projected to be a closer in his future. I mean, I think the bullpen, if anything, is where you got to start and look for the hope.
I think there's a lot of talent in the bullpen with young guys and the guys they have right now. But it's all about what you can get out of them. It's all about the production level. And obviously in the past couple of years, you haven't really gotten out of them, especially last year. But there's a chance that they could be a dominant bullpen once again, you know, of the days with back when Jason Grilley was in there, and Tony Watson, Justin Wilson, those type of guys. There's a lot of shoes to fill from those years, but it can still happen. And I think maybe this year could definitely be a step in the right direction to getting that bullpen back on par with how they used to be.
Yeah, the bullpen, I think, definitely has its strengths. But the rotation is what kind of scares me. I think the lineup's fine, and I know we've talked about it. Bell, whoever you throw, but I think it's Bell, and I kind of like the fact that you still got Brian Reynolds playing left, I guess, if you put Gerard Dyson in center, which looks like going to happen. and if you get Polanco back. So I think the lineup can be good. Do I have that much confidence in it? Not really.
No.
And
no.
That kind of goes against what I was just saying. But I think if it's anchored by Josh Bell, then if he could perform near the caliber that he did in the first half and not near the second half of the 2019 season.
Him and him being a leader, at least by example, then it could really help that lineup.
Yeah, you could find something. There's got to be something there, right? I mean, the pitching staff – rotation-wise is kind of what concerns me because you don't know what you're going to get from Trevor Williams. You don't know what you're going to get from Archer, but hey, cut the dreads. Maybe he's going to be go back to old Chris Gold, good Chris Archer.
Good Archer.
And Joe Musgrove is fine, but can he take the next step? Mitch Keller, please, somebody develop a young pitcher in this organization.
If he's expected to be a top 35 prospect, then make him turn him into that type of guy. Don't let someone like Tyler Glasnow, where he was supposed to be a good prospect, walk and let Mitch Keller not be good and then let him go in a trade.
And have Mitch Keller become the greatest pitcher of all time.
Yeah. Like, it's turning into Groundhog Day here in Pittsburgh where we're letting guys go that end up developing into stars elsewhere. But back to the lineup aspect, I think this year's offense relies on one guy, and that guy is Gregory Polanco.
Yep.
If he can come back and be healthy the whole year and be consistent – and help this lineup and put up maybe 25 homers and 80 RBIs and hit like 285. That's what you need out of him. And I think he's a perfect complementary piece to Josh Bell. And I think they can feed off of each other depending on where they're hitting in the lineup. I think it really, really relies on Polanco this year.
Never thought I would a whole Pirate season would rely on Gregory Polanco.
Because here we are.
Because
when Polanco came up, he had McCutchen and he had Marte, but now both of them are out of the picture. It's all on him in the outfield right now. I know Reynolds is played well last year, but
you have to expect the sophomore slump.
A little bit. You have to expect some sort of it, some form. So I think Polanco, it's tough to come back from such a lengthy injury and perform to, high standards, but it just got to happen. And I think if he steps up and if Bell continues to be at least consistent throughout the year, hitting-wise, they can have a dangerous lineup. Just based off of them two, because if you have teams coming into Pittsburgh or whenever they play on the road, looking at those two guys and saying they're extremely dangerous, like you have a good lineup there with other guys surrounding them.
I definitely agree. And I think catcher is one position of need, as we've mentioned before.
And we got that dude in the minors, still, I think. Or no, we didn't get a catcher from that Arizona team.
No, it still has not been addressed. Which is a major concern of mine. But that's a topic for another time with the Pirates. Let's move on. XFL. Still going on. And actually kind of going kind of strong. So, P.J. Walker, Cardale Jones. Other than that, quarterback plays kind of bad.
Matt McGloin, Andy Murray, all those guys sucking it up.
Yeah. Not good. But the XFL, I mean, it's been watchable, actually. It's kind of surprising, but, I mean, it's been kind of watchable. You got teams like Dallas and Houston who are not too bad. And when you got Landry Jones as the face of your league, you would think it'd be unwatchable, but it actually hasn't.
It's actually watchable.
It actually hasn't been. So
Landry Jones.
Have you guys watched in the last 2 weeks? I know we discussed last week a little bit, but have you guys watched since... And what's your takeaways now that we're 2 weeks in?
I'm going to be honest. I have seen just here and there stuff on social media. I have not watched any bit of it on live TV. I haven't really watched any of the highlights. But I can tell you right now that it looks like, I guess, DC Defenders are going to be your top team with Cardale Jones leading the way. I mean, they shut out the Guardians of New York and then last week beating the Seattle Dragons. So I think they're a team to watch out for. Cardale Jones is also pretty good talent. I think he fits this league perfectly. And I think he's got a good arm. So I think they're a team to continue to watch out for. I think maybe they're the team that only loses a handful of games. So.
And, yeah, I mean, I watched the highlights of the first week. I just threw in the highlights. And someone that impressed me was P.J. Walker, who has 7 touchdowns through 2 games. He gives me Kyler Murray vibe, just the – he's like a smaller dude, is able to scramble out, move the pocket, and able to make great throws. I mean, all in all, I think he's a solid talent who, in my opinion, will probably get maybe an NFL job at some point.
I mean, he was the backup to Andrew Luck, and he convinced P.J. Walker, Andrew Luck convinced P.J. Walker to join the XFL and Oliver Luck's league. So, good job there by Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck's just a great human being.
Yeah, he definitely is.
He just doesn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, I think, you know, D.C., they've been playing phenomenal. They had a shutout, 27-0.
I think it's gonna be Houston and D.C.
D.C. plays phenomenal defense. I kind of like what I'm seeing from the XFL. I still don't like the kickoffs. I think that's weird. I still don't like the let's go for 3-point extra point convert. I don't like that.
But then if it just would have been the same as the NFL,
it's different. I think it's not a bad thing.
But what I do like is I like the fact that you have one referee. Specific job is to spot the ball, and I think that is very important.
Because you always see those videos that go around on the internet.
You always see the great generous spots the Patriots get, and you're like, please get one person in there just to spot the ball. And I like the idea of it, and I think that's one good thing that the XFL is doing. Now, hearing all the play calls, I don't really like that. You can't really audible much either because you don't have any time to audible. And I also think the other big one is being able to listen in on replay reviews. And if you can listen in to replay reviews,
it takes out the tension.
It's interesting to hear what they say, but do you really want to? I think it would be really cool if we all would be able to get to hear what the conversation with Al Riveron and whoever else was in the booth with the Jesse James play. I think that would have definitely been interesting to be able to hear, but. Do I really want to hear that though? Honestly, no.
Because I don't want to know what they're thinking.
I really don't want to know. And then we can bash that. We could bash like
oh, you idiot.
Yeah, something like that. And everybody loves to do. But I think the XFL is doing some things good. Will they last more than a season?
Yeah, I think
possible.
So.
But I think with them, you just got to take it one week at a time.
I think they'll 100% make it through a season for sure. I mean, do we know what the viewers was this time around this week?
It dropped a little bit from week one, but there were still a bunch of people. Like Seattle had their first home game; they had a bunch of people there.
Yeah, I feel like
good attendance at most places.
Did they say how many games they're gonna have in a season?
It's 10 weeks.
10 weeks? I think they can make it through 10.
Yeah,
I think they can too. I think it'll hold up, and I think. Hopefully
and then maybe they too. Add more teams at this point. And next season they add more players. You
they
never
tweeted
know.
Out, who wants an XFL team? Maybe Pittsburgh will get one. I don't know how to feel about that. But
I don't think Pittsburgh should get one.
Without the three football teams?
Well, let's move on. So Pittsburgh does not have the NBA basketball, but what they do have is college basketball. Let's preview March Madness a little bit. We'll be doing this more in depth in the next coming weeks. But Penn State, wow, Penn State, they're really good. RMU. They've not done so well recently, RMU basketball.
Yeah, a couple dropped games the past couple weeks.
Yeah, so what are we thinking in terms of college basketball-wise? Pitt, NIT, no one's interested tournament, maybe, as a lot of people like to call it.
That's actually the first time I've ever heard someone call it that. But
I mean, they're on a 3-game losing streak right now, Pitt, and they have to finish off strong and play in the conference tournament. They have to play well. I don't think they're going to be a tournament team at all this year in either of the tournaments.
You don't think they're making the No One's Interested tournament?
Not really.
That's what my dad calls it.
Well, no one's interested in Pitt, so they should make the Nobody's Interested tournament.
But this year, college basketball, I think, has been the best by far because how many upsets have we seen? We just saw Duke get crushed, throttled by NC State last night, number 6 Duke, and that's kind of untypical of them to lose like that. I'm surprised Baylor has held that top spot, though, for so long.
Yep. Like, who's on Baylor? Loss.
Exactly. They sort of emerged as a top team. Gonzaga's obviously up there. Kansas. San Diego State could be a number 1 seed in the tournament. Where did they come from?
I know.
Gonzaga's literally
undefeated.
It's hard. No, they're not. They're 26-1.
I'm talking San Diego State.
Oh, San Diego's
undefeated. They're 26-0.
Who's on San Diego State?
Exactly. They're also playing in whatever.
They're playing
West.
In Mountain West.
Yeah, Mountain West.
I mean, undefeated.
They're number 4 in the country.
But even though Pitt's not in it, I mean, you do got two exciting teams in the local viewing area, and West Virginia's at 17, and then Penn State at 9. So
Penn State's at 9. Wow.
This is such a weird year.
Yeah, Ohio State's been in and out of the top 25 like 4 different times.
I think what we need to do.
Then let's see. Let's go look. Teams that I think I've never seen in here before.
I think what we need to do when March Madness kicks around right before, like, that week that it starts, I think we should do an extended show or, like, an extended podcast to go through our picks. I think that
would be. Well, just look at this. Your number one team is Baylor. Number two is Gonzaga. They both have one loss. You're looking at San Diego State at 4. Dayton is 5. Dayton. Sean Loughran is on that team.
Dayton.
Atlantic 10.
Maryland is at 7.
Maryland.
Maryland's okay,
been okay.
Yeah.
Penn State is 9. That is a football school.
A shock.
Auburn is 13.
Auburn has been building a solid program over the past
couple
years.
Auburn was number 4 earlier in the year, and then they sort of dropped
And then
off.
Here comes the Big East. Creighton 15, 16 Seton Hall, Marquette's 19. This ain't the
Butler
same press.
21.
This ain't the
same. Does Marquette still have Marcus Howard?
I believe he's a senior this year. I believe so.
He's probably a big factor in that.
West Virginia, no longer really press Virginia. They're in here. Colorado, okay, I guess they're good.
Butler, Houston.
Houston. BYU? This ain't Jimmer for that team.
This ain't Jimmer.
Arizona, after all the problems they've had with Sean Miller's teams, they're back in it.
Ohio State.
And Ohio State.
What is this?
Ohio State moves up from 32 to 25. Arizona moves up from 30 to 24. BYU from 29 to 23 in the latest AP poll.
This is unreal. Like, I've never seen so many upsets. And look.
That's why this year is going
to
be, I think,
there's only one. Like, much there's only one predict. Like blue blood school in the top five, being Kansas,
Dayton, Gonzaga. Oh, you mean Kansas?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I thought you were talking about Baylor,
the team that's always been like really phenomenally good, and then Duke's out on the outside.
I'm sorry.
Like Kentucky
wait,
up there at 10. So
wait, I thought you were talking about Houston. It wasn't Butler.
Remember Angie?
Remember Steven?
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in March Madness. I really don't know what's going to happen.
I think it's going to be really fun,
though. It's going to be so fun, and my bracket's going to be busted the first year.
We're going to get a lot of TV
screens. Hey, I have to make – I swear on my life, I will bring that TV up here.
We need to have 4 TVs in our room.
Anybody that lives in Adams that wants to bring a TV up to our room and watch the March Madness tournament, do it.
Goldberg, we're looking at you.
Or that doesn't live in Adams but just wants to bring up – We're stealing everybody's TV. Colin, you're bringing your TV over too. So that's college basketball.
Villanova surprisingly at 12.
Yeah, there's a lot. Let's go to predictions. Pens, Maple Leafs. Who we got in this game tonight?
Give me Pens. They just absolutely smoked the Maple Leafs, and I think they're going to go ahead.
Give me
and do
Pens
it
as well. The Maple Leafs just don't have a good defense. That's their downfall this year. They have injuries as well, but they just don't have a good defense. Pens win this one. I say they put another 5 goals up, 5-2.
Give me Pens 3-1. I say Patrick Hornquist scores an empty net goal at the end to be able to score another goal for himself and be able to put the Penguins back on top. Does RMU basketball get the number one seed in the NEC tournament? They're struggling, lost 2 in a row. Controversial call against Fairleigh Dickinson, tipped in at the buzzer. And then the no call on Josh Williams getting run over. And then another loss to St. Francis the other day. I'm going to say no. I think there's a couple home games left.
Did you say I'm going to say yes, I'm going to say no?
No, I want to say yes, but I'm going to say no. But I think it's possible that they could be able to make a comeback. Nate, say something.
I mean, this team has proven to be good and consistent throughout the season, except obviously this last stretch. I think they could potentially host the NEC tournament if they win out, because I don't think Merrimack's eligible.
Right.
And then I think there's a chance that they could win. And
they basically
got to
win out. Basically got to win out.
Yeah. Imagine if RMU makes the tournament.
Hey, and then play Baylor, and then we get to go cover it. But Golvash, you wouldn't be able to because you're invisible in the newsroom and no one knows who you are in there. But you could.
But I'll be like, hey, my friends are there.
Yeah, you could do that.
I get to be super, super supportive.
All right, last one. Garrett Cole pitches on Monday versus the Pirates. Does anything unnatural happen?
No, I think we'll define
unnatural.
And whatever innings he pitches, I think he dominates. That's it.
Garrett Cole hit a batter?
No.
Not on purpose, but does it happen?
No.
Okay, I don't think so either.
Wow, would this be his first time playing the Pirates or something?
No, but I just think it's interesting because he's on the Yankees and he's playing the Pirates. Mitch Keller starts Saturday versus the Twins and the Pirates.
Does he give up more than 5 runs?
It's spring training. Who knows? Let's go to shout-outs. Who would like to go first?
I'll go first. Shout-out my sister, Allison, and Amanda. My sister's Allison, Amanda, Rachel, who may potentially be listening. My grandma, Bryce Singer, and my parents as well.
All right. Shout out my boy Alec, and shout out the boys, Vinny Episcopo and Mikey O'Hanlon, for tuning in
Vinny.
As well.
Golash has been checking his phone a lot. That must be who's been texting him during the show.
Yeah, they've been texting me. They wanted to talk about some things, but I couldn't.
They've probably been, you know.
Vinny wanted to talk about Ben's return. Big Ben's return.
Yeah,
so,
I'm a little worried about if Ben does even return.
Exactly, but yeah, shout out to my boys. Go tear it up. Go tear it up Sunday for the championship inline team.
We should field either
do you want to field some calls
or a question segment at the end. Get people to ask questions.
Oh, we got to be interactive with the
viewers.
Just
like that fun segment me and John Hanna had on Army Focus, because we definitely want to duplicate that. Let's go to shout outs for me. I want to shout out Chris Moore, WQED-TV, KDK Radio. He went to speak to the Purblite today, our old alum at the Purblite. I want to say happy birthday to Colin or Jerry. His birthday is tomorrow. And shout out to my family, as always. Golvash just threw something, and that was not necessary. But that is our show for today. As always, another great show, another great time. We'll still try to be better next time, but, you know.
There's no guarantees.
There's no guarantees to that. So, as we try to get our music queued up, what doesn't seem like it is working. There it is.
Wait.
There's our music. Golvash is still probably checking comments of people that are trashing our show.
No. Will Dempsey, you shut your mouth right now. We're not talking about Matt Murray and Tristan Jarry.
I don't know what that meant, but okay.
Thank you.
That is the show for this week. I kind of wanted it to be over after hearing that, whatever that's supposed to mean. I am Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Bryce here.
And I am Andrew Golvash.
That is that. Enjoy this week of basketball. Enjoy high school basketball as well. I know I will.
Go Sean Laughlin.
And go high school basketball, and it's going to be great. Have a great weekend.